Everybody's rocking tonight.
Tired of the same old oldies stations playing the same tracks over and over again? If you want to hear some great 50s music you probably never heard before, come and listen to my show, Colin Davies, the Professor of Rock, here on Thursdays from 4 till 6.
We're not just another radio station.
Well, yeah, we are. Cable radio, WEBR.
This is Dean Cain. What if I told you that there's a network of hospitals that provide what many consider to be the best medical care in the world without ever expecting a penny of payment in return? Well, believe it or not, it's true. At Shriners Hospitals, all children receive state-of-the-art medical care totally without charge. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area, so if you know a child with orthopedic problems or severe burns, the Shriners could help. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Pin Show,
the smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
Well, all right. We are back on the Andy Pin Show. And let's continue here with a little bit on Billary, Hill and Billary. So Hillary Clinton has to stand independent of Bill. People were commentating today about how if you look at her web video of her announcement, it's very homey. It's shot in her home in Washington. And she wants to have a conversation with you and hear your ideas, and she's going to go around the country and all this. It's the softer side of Hillary, which is fine because she has a rather hard image. Now, she's cultivated some of that, the hawkishness, the pro-war stance. And so the fact that she feels she can go a little softer is interesting, because I think the biggest problem a woman has right now in this country, or even someone as callow as George Bush was in 2000, would be post 9/11, we now realize it's important to have someone in the White House who has some sense of the geopolitical balance out there and what is doable in the world and what is not doable. And clearly we didn't get that from Bush. You know, he was never vetted, is the problem. And I put this at the feet of the Republican Party. They said, we want a winner. We want to get the presidency back. We want to get the judges. Let's pick somebody we think will have broad appeal. And so Bush was settled on in part because he'd get a huge Christian vote, and the compassionate conservatism could sell to the moderates and swing voters and some blue-collar Reagan Democrat types. Well, the Republican Party didn't really vet him. They rocketed him to the top. He didn't really get a workout during that campaign. There were three short debates with Gore, and then we had a tied election roughly. And 6 years later, we're stuck in Iraq. So, on one level, Hillary's got a higher bar to cover, to clear, than Bush does. On another, she's so superior to Bush. As a president, she would be so much better than Bush. I just think, and for those of you all who are Hillary haters out there, and by the way, I'm not endorsing her here, but it is amazing how polarizing she has become. I am more and more impressed with Hillary Clinton. Everything you hear about from other senators, who she's working with, the deals she strikes with different people from different backgrounds and stripes. So it's going to be interesting to see, but she may be unstoppable. You know, a lot of Republicans think, oh, you know, they're kind of patronizing, and secretly they're hoping it'll be Hillary because they think they can swamp her. Well, let me remind Republicans of the 1980 election. You know, the Carter campaign thought that Reagan was such a polarizing figure that he couldn't win in the general election. And so they were secretly pleased, and in fact, openly pleased, when Reagan won the nomination. And they got what they wished for, and it came back and burned them. So there are Republicans out there who are warning other Republicans, don't assume that Hillary with the nomination means that the Republican's going to win. So it's going to be interesting to see about that. Back to Bill Clinton. Like I say, Hillary has to be independent from Bill. You know, you notice when George Bush was running, once his father appeared with him, and I think he put his arm around him, but he said, I'm so proud of this boy. Well, you cannot have even a former president calling the guy who wants to be president, this boy. Okay, that was the last time George H.W. Bush appeared with George W. Bush on the campaign stump in the year 2000. So Hillary, in the same way, has got to make it clear that she's her own woman and is not put, we're not putting Bill back in the White House for 8 years. But there's also all kinds of issues of protocol in that. What, how are they introduced? You know, right now it's the president and Mrs. Bush, but with Hillary, it'd be the president, but also the former president, because Bill Clinton, as a former president, that's the protocol when he walks into a room. So it'd be Madam President and former President Clinton, I guess. Anyway, it would be interesting. But I also can see the stars aligning for Hillary a little bit here in a couple of regards. Now, she's got to continue to track with what's going on in Iraq in terms of whether or not you can get through the primaries and still be for the Iraq war, because the Democrats have come to the conclusion much quicker than the Republicans have or will, that the Iraq war is not something that is, quote, winnable. You know, Bush still talks about victory. There's not a victory to be had, and that doesn't make me a defeatist. It's a realism about the nature of playing a game on somebody else's home field when the game is war. It's pretty tough to do. The British learned it in the Revolutionary War. We learned it in Vietnam. Or maybe we didn't, because we're back. In any case, beyond Iraq, Hillary's got a couple things going for her. Healthcare has been her signature issue, and the stars are aligning on healthcare initiatives. There are people that want to pursue that. Also, she is, now let's see, there were a couple of things that she has been talking about besides healthcare. It's escaped me. It'll come back to me. But let me move back to Bill for a minute, because the question comes up, will he be an asset or not? And I find that laughable as a question. Now, I do think that they'll be careful how they use him. One of the things Hillary's learned is not to speak on the same dais with Bill. He is so good. He's such a good speaker that he's tough to follow. And so you wouldn't send him around like a lot of spouses do and introduce the candidate. No, Clinton might upstage her day after day with that. But you could send him across the country and be running two campaigns at the same time with rock star power. So even before she has a vice presidential nominee to be her partner, she can send Bill Clinton out. And he commands at least as big an audience as she does. In fact, the only rock star bigger in politics then both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton is Bill Clinton. And so he would be a huge asset. Now, they'd have to use him judiciously. Both the Clintons have negatives with a percentage of people. Something like 40% of the Americans say they will not vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, I don't know if that will stay that solid, or if over time, as she is reintroduced and people learn more about her, hear her differently now, she might be less polarizing, but it isn't going to move too many percent, probably. The question is, of the people who are willing to consider voting for her, will they vote for her? So I don't see Bill as a barrier. In fact, you know, one view from the blue state of mind of the last 6 years of the Bush administration is that the red state of mind is it sees danger at every turn out there in the world. Now, it is true there is a lot of uncertainty, but there is opportunity in uncertainty. There may be danger, but we seem to get a military response to every problem from the current government. You know, last week when Bush gave his surge speech, the big news about it was that he issued a not-so-veiled warning about Iran and Syria and said that he's going to stop them. It made it look like that, combined with some Iranians that were seized inside Iraq, it looks like the Bush administration might be trying to provoke Iran. And, you know, Bush has confided in the people before, apparently, that he believes that he has to take care of Iran before he leaves office, that the next president won't have the guts or the power or the whatever to do it. Well, it's so bad that the Democrats, Harry Reid is talking about, he warned Bush flat out that you have to come to Congress before you launch any kind of attack on Iran. There's time for that. And he's going to put together a motion to say that that's what Bush would have to do if he wants permission to attack Iran. Now, see, I don't think a motion like that gets through, but I do think Bush could muck up the Middle East even further if, in fact, he's given free rein. And part of the problem with the surge, and I guess I should finish with Hillary and Bill and the Democrats, but, you know, part of the problem with the surge is that not just that it gets us in deeper, but that, you know, this was an opportunity to make a move, to make a change. And so they're claiming it's a change, but it's really just a tactical change. I'll save all that for the last segment. In any case, this idea that Bill wouldn't be an asset is ludicrous. He would be an asset both to Hillary's campaign and afterwards. He'd be an asset to the United States. Imagine if she named him Chief Middle East Envoy, right? Or Secretary of State. I don't think there's anything wrong with him serving. Oh, no, wait a minute. Let's see. After Bobby Kennedy was John Kennedy's Attorney General, the Republicans and Democrats passed a law that you can't have an immediate family member in your cabinet, I think. So I guess Bill couldn't do that. In any case, imagine him as Middle East Envoy, Special Middle East Envoy. He might actually get something done. Let me return to this red state of mind, blue state of mind thing. The one of the fundamental differences in the red state of mind, blue state of mind is how international relations are viewed, how other cultures are viewed, how diversity is viewed. You know, a lot of red state of mind folks criticize diversity, claim that it's all political correctness, that it's not that important. In fact, as the world gets globalized, the U.S., and I love that expression, you know, it's an old, it's an urban legend that that's a George Bushism, that he once said, the world is becoming global, which, of course, it's already global. That's why it's the world. But in the case of the U.S., we are in a unique position. We are approaching the point where we will not have a majority ethnic group. There will not be 51% whites anymore. We'll have a huge melting pot and a huge range of ideas and cultures represented. We have a lot of Asians. We have a lot of everything. And that's a strength that a lot of people in a red state of mind, they only see the threat from illegal immigration. And, of course, there is a threat there. And there's a threat from globalization, that wages will be suppressed and the middle class will lose out. But you can't stop globalization. Globalization is water seeking its own level. Water always finds its own level. That's what we mean by a level playing field or a free market. The problem is that the bottom price for labor in the world is quite low. And so for a lot of things that can be done with hands, China, other countries in Asia and elsewhere can do this stuff so cheap that those jobs just will never stay in the U.S. And so the people that lose out are the people in the U.S. that don't get enough education so they can do something besides work with their hands. Because while there'll be some jobs here, plenty of service jobs, you can't outsource those. But otherwise, you need to be using your head. And so that's America's great strength, is that we're at the forefront of computer software and a variety of other kinds of technologies, from film to video to the chips, the variety of things. In any case, as we look at the 2008 race, what's going to come up is, where do we go from here, right? Whether we're, you know, both candidates say they're going to pull out of Iraq, or one says he's going to stay and one says he's going to pull out. I think America is going to vote against the war and finally get us out after Bush leaves office. But then the question is, where does that person want to take us? Well, the blue state of mind recognizes that Bush Cheney and Rumsfeld have done tremendous damage to our credibility around the world. Our credibility's in shambles in the Middle East. First of all, they sat out the Israeli-Palestinian conflict for 5 or 6 years, okay, claiming that you can't negotiate with Arafat, he's not a negotiating partner, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's truth to that, but you can never give up on these things. You've got to make progress. When you leave it unattended, things blow up, and plenty of things blew up in the Middle East, not just in Iraq, over the last few years. But the other piece of this is, you know, after Bush went into Iraq, he covered his tracks after there were no WMD by stressing democracy. And suddenly, once we're in Iraq, democracy became the centerpiece of Bush's foreign policy. Right, which is a little strange for someone who doesn't want to do nation building and all of this. But that was the position he painted himself into. The problem with this is that now what some conservatives are saying is that, well, if we've been cured now of this tendency to be engaged in the world, that we'll now get isolationist. No, that's not the message from Iraq. The message isn't to be isolationist. It's not to go in with your army first and ask questions later. Ask the questions first. You may not like the answers you get, but you will find that you get answers, and it might stop you from going in and making a mess of it.